It's amazing to be here with all of you. This is the first time I give a Dharma talk in English, so I'm a bit more nervous than usual, but it usually works out anyways. So like Hannah said yesterday, the kind of theme, overall theme of this particular weekend is one Sangha. So the first thing I did when I sat down to start writing this talk was to ask myself the question, how do we create or form a Sangha? And then when we have a Sangha, because most of us come from a Sangha that's existent already, how do we stay as a Sangha? Because it's not just that we have a Sangha and then everything is fine. It's practice and it's challenging and so on. So how do we form a Sangha and how do we stay as one? And I also thought, how do we deal with being both so different in each individual Sangha, but between Sanghas in Sweden or in Europe or in the world, but also sharing so much as we already do? So these are topics that were mentioned in the introduction yesterday as well. So we're all individuals with different personalities, different qualities. So we're from mainland Europe today and this weekend. So I think officially we're from 9 countries if you just look at the centers from which we have come here. But beyond that, it's more mainland Europe because there's probably more diversity culturally, ethnically, and language-wise, I just guess. I already know that there are people from other countries than those 9 countries in this room. So I can just use myself as an example. I'm born and raised in Sweden, but I'm not Swedish by blood at all, not a single drop. But culturally, I'm Swedish. My mom is from Serbia. My father is from Denmark. I have partly Icelandic blood and a bit of Hungarian blood. And I just, if that's me and you look around the room and there are 70 of us, I guess that there's quite a lot of mix in this room in terms of just where we are from. And that's difference and diversity. And then if you go beyond just the fact that we're from Europe, there's gender identity, some people identifying as either male or female. Probably some of us might not identify as either of those, some of both, something beyond, who knows. And that's, I think, a strength of this particular Sangha, Triratna, that's something that we can include more and more, hopefully. Of course, sexuality, religious background. I don't know, maybe some of you have Jewish upbringing or something. You know, it's like we are not either secular or Buddhist. I think there's more of a mix in there. And then socioeconomic background, you know, it's like tons of differences that you could look at. And we're not going to look at all of them today. But then what do we share was my next question. So there are all these differences. What do we share? And I was thinking like the European identity. And I was like, is that an identity that I have? Do I feel European? And if that's the case, am I European first and Swedish or something second? Or is it the other way around? And then we have the EU, and some people might be leaving the EU soon. What does that mean in terms of a European identity? And I realized, well, I hope this is part of creating that mainland European identity that the order members from the area council yesterday mentioned. I hope we can build a stronger sense of identity as mainland Europe. But I also realized that I think what we have in common is the Dharma. I think that's, if that can be an identity, I think that's more helpful as an identity than being European. That we have the Dharma, we have a shared vision and shared ideals. And then I thought, okay, so back to the questions, how to become a Sangha and what do we do to stay as a Sangha? And I realized we don't have to look out there for some new research or some method, you know, beyond the Dharma. We don't need any radical ideal from somewhere else. We have radical ideals. We have methods. I always find that so interesting. The Buddha didn't just say, yeah, you can grow, you can develop. He said, here is something you can try. And he didn't just give us one method, he gave us too many to even practice in a lifetime. So we've got tons to draw from in the Dharma. We don't have to go elsewhere necessarily. That doesn't mean that we can't go elsewhere to find inspiration, but I think the Dharma is more than enough. So the talk has three parts. So first, personal experience of mine of Sangha, and then a few Dharmic frameworks for being and building Sangha. And then I thought I'd end with a poem of Bhante's to bring in a more kind of mystic, mythical element without commenting on the poem, just giving it to you and you can ponder it for the rest of your lives. So the personal experience that I wanted to mention is the same one that Toby mentioned in his introduction. So in January, Hannah and Toby came to Stockholm. So I think I had heard their names before. I think I'd seen Toby's Facebook picture. That's about what I knew about them. And then there was an email saying, there are two or three order members below 35 in mainland Europe. Two of you are in Sweden. Could either of you or both of you come and help us in Berlin? From these people I didn't know. And I decided that I wanted to participate and contribute. So they said, oh, we'll come to Stockholm so we can discuss this more. And I thought, wow, that's commitment. So they came and they stayed with me. So like he said, in the first day, I think I met them at the central station in Stockholm. I showed them around this central Stockholm city. I think that's it. I showed them Stockholm. We went back to my place and had a planning meeting, had dinner together. And I remember us sitting around the dining table in our flat and just feeling like I knew their names this morning and now I feel like we're best friends. And it's not in a sort of romantic movie kind of way. It was just like this genuine feeling of being friends and having been friends for ages, which wasn't the case, but that was my feeling. So how did that happen? How is that possible? I guess a lot of you might have that experience either from this weekend already or from other encounters in the Triratna world. But how does that work? It's happened before with me several times. So I think it's to do with shared daily practice. We try living the same ethical lives. We do the same meditation practices regularly and so on. So I guess that's part of it. I also think that has to do something with the strength of Triratnas. So we have a shared idea about community and about friendship. So there's like you kind of know that you have roughly the same idea of what it means to be a friend, because that's not always the case. You know, you usually need to really get to know a person to realize if we're on the same level in a friendship. But in Triratna, I feel that generally, not always, you can just connect and trust that the other person has a shared idea about what friendship is or can be. And on top of that, I guess it's all these ideals that we share, development, a vision that's bigger than everyday life, you know, all these big ideals and visions that we share. So based on that, we only needed a day, and that was it. Yes. Okay, so on to the Dharmic framework that we can use to build Sangha and to stay as a Sangha. So the Buddha, and therefore Buddhism, loves lists. I guess you have all noticed that by now. And if not, after this talk, you will have noticed. I also love lists. I think that's partly why I studied Sanskrit and Pali, because I just love them. So I'll give you three lists of four things that we can use in this talk. So the first list are the four Sangraha Vastus. So the translation that Bhante uses, one of them is means of unification. And he talks about them as being like, what are the means or the skills or the qualities that a bodhisattva uses to form a Sangha around them, to build a pure land, to build a world filled with Dharma. So the first one is Dana. And I guess you've all heard about Dana, generosity or giving. And Bhante, I really like this, Bhante says that this is the most basic of Buddhist virtues. So that's quite a heavy statement, I think. The most basic of Buddhist virtues. So we give, we share between each other. And you could think, oh, that means putting dana in the dana bowl, meaning a note or a coin or something. But Bhante stresses that it has to do with establishing positive connection. I had forgotten that I served you Chinese tea straight away, but I guess that was part of the connection, that I shared something. I shared tea, but I also shared some of my experience of different ways of preparing tea or something. And apparently it worked. But it also creates spiritual friendship. You know, giving and sharing, not just material stuff and money, but sharing yourself. Without that, I don't think there could be friendship. If you're not open about, you know, how you think, what you feel, how will there be friendship? And of course, it helps to form spiritual community, because we need to give in order to receive. He also talks about the fact that we don't give because people need something in the Sangha, but giving is an expression of our awareness of them. I really like that. We give not because they need something, but because we want to express that we are aware of them. And we want to express our positivity for them, and then he continues, our special concern for them. I don't think I need to comment, when you give, you want to show them that you care about them. It's not more complicated than that, and it really works. Then we have the second Sangrahavastu, Priyavadita, so loving speech, or positive speech, maybe. So this has to do with talking in an emotionally positive and kind manner. That's Bhante. A positively emotional and kind manner. And Bhante is quick to say, it's not about using special kind of language or words. So it has nothing to do with saying, oh darling, oh my sweetie. I have order members from the UK working with me at the center, and they call me darling and sweetie, and it works. But it's not that simple. You can't just use the right language. So if it's not the right language, what is it about? And to quote Bhante again, because I really like his writing on this as well, it's about being unafraid of letting people know that you like them. That's what loving speech is about, being unafraid of expressing that you like them. You don't really have to know a person very well to do that, do you? You can just say, you have very friendly eyes or something. I was in the mingle with somebody yesterday and I thought, he has very friendly eyes. And I decided I'm going to tell him that today, because I didn't yesterday. But it's that simple. Oh well, it can be that simple. The third one of the Sangrahavastus is Artacharya, so beneficial or helpful activity. And then you can think, oh, that means charity work. But in the Buddhist context, it has more to do with encouraging people to grow and develop spiritually. So it's a bit of a different take on being helpful. It also has to do with inspiration. So you inspire others to practice the Dharma. That's the most helpful thing you can do in a Sangha, to give people opportunities and inspiration enough to decide to deepen their practice. And then the fourth Sangrahavastu, Samanartata, so exemplification, so being an example for others. So this has to do with being that our behavior should, as much as we can, be consistent with what we teach. So there is a saying in English, practice what you preach. And we don't talk about preaching in Triratna. But practice what you teach, perhaps. So what we do is not that we have to be perfect to be in a Sangha, or we have to be perfect to be responsible for something in the Sangha, but it's more to do with that we try as much as we can to embody the qualities that we're talking to others about. And we encourage others to develop the same qualities. And the last thing Bhante says about this is something that struck me when I read it the other week. So how do we inspire each other in a Sangha? And he says we inspire others by being inspired ourselves. So in a sense, it's not, you can't force being inspiring, like as a kind of being a kind of life coach, touring the world, giving magical lectures or something. You just practice the Dharma because you are inspired by the Dharma, and that will be the magic, I guess, that you quoted Bhante talking about. So giving and generosity, loving speech, beneficial activity, and exemplification. And really, this list is almost enough to work with in a Sangha. You know, there's tons of layers to go into. But that's one list that you can use and be inspired by. Then I think a more common list, so the four Brahma Viharas. So I think maybe more of you might have heard of those. The first one of those is Metta or Maitri, so the one we practice in the Metta Bhavana. So friendliness, benevolence, goodwill are usual translations. But I would like to add care, warmth, and love. I won't say much about that because I'm assuming most of you have been in touch with the meditation practice at least. There's something about goodwill though. So it's not that we have to feel this huge amount of love for somebody or everybody, but we just want them to have a good life, a good, you know, existence. And then we have karuna, compassion, as it's usually translated. So we see and empathize with others when they're suffering. So there's a word in Pali for this, anukampa, that's a synonym of karuna, and it usually means to shake with. There's a phrase in Pali, the wise shake together with those in suffering. And I just think it's a beautiful image. But the Buddhist tradition also says that it's not enough, because if you just take it in and kind of feel it, that could just turn into you suffering more, maybe even suffering more than they do if you're not careful. So karuna has this very strong emphasis on mainly wishing people freedom from suffering. And maybe you have to realize that you can't fix their suffering, but you want them to be free from suffering. So the wish for people to be free from suffering is the main thing. Then the third one is mudita. So rejoicing in other people's happiness or merits. So it's the opposite of being envious or jealous of other people when they're happy. So I think we could really practice this on a weekend like this. You know, you'll see people being happy, being joyful, finding new friends and so on. And regardless of what's going on for you, just rejoice, be happy for them. And the fourth one is upeksha. So the English word is equanimity. I don't know in all of the other languages present in the room, but in Swedish it's a bit tricky to translate sometimes, because the standard translation for equanimity into Swedish, jämnmod, is it sounds so negative and passive and kind of distanced from stuff. But the Buddhist virtue of upeksha is just that you hold everything that life brings, happiness, sadness, sorrows, joys, praise, blame, whatever comes your way, you're balanced enough in your mind because of metta and other qualities that you have, that you can just hold it and you can meet it in a skillful, helpful way. So it's a very positive state of mind. So four Sangraha Vastus, four Brahma Viharas, and then the last four are actually very closely connected to ordination in our tradition. And I know that most people here are not ordained, and a lot of you might not even want ever to be ordained, and you know, I thought that this list could be helpful anyways. So when we are ordained into the Jiratna Buddhist order, there are three acceptance lines or verses. I think that's the official way of describing them. Yeah, the four, yeah, sorry, yeah.
three lists of four, so.
Yeah, there are four on my list, so. Yeah. So, I think I want to use them partly because I think they have to do with the Sangha, large beyond the order, but also because I relate to them in my daily life or everyday life quite a lot, because I find them very helpful in terms of thinking of Sangha. So the first one is, with loyalty to my teacher, I accept this ordination. So with loyalty to my teachers, so that it's not teacher as in Bhante Sangharakshita, but my teachers, so they can be other order members as well. And I think for the wider Sangha, that could perhaps have to do with the fact that if we have a shared understanding of the Dharma, as presented by Bhante Sangharakshita, and if we practice roughly the same kind of meditations and the same kind of ethics and so on, that has a unifying effect on the Sangha. So we're loyal to the Triratna system, not because we think it's the best in the world, but because we think that Triratna is the place for us, and we see that if we do roughly the same thing, what happened in my flat in Solna a few months ago can happen more easily, I think. The second line or verse is, in harmony with friends and brethren, I accept this ordination. So that means that we're trying to do it together, even though we are different. That's a tricky bit of Sangha. We are different. We have different opinions. We even have different opinions about Dharma. You know, you could think that we have political differences or something, but we even have different ideas about how to meditate, why to meditate, and so on. So even within the Dharma, we have different opinions. But we want to do it in harmony anyways. The third one is, for the sake of enlightenment, I accept this ordination. So what does that mean for us? For me, it means that what Triratna offers and what I'm trying to live is not just secular mindfulness, for example. So secular mindfulness is very good for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people come to our centers because of secular mindfulness. So I have nothing at all against it. But if Triratna was only a secular mindfulness movement, I wouldn't be standing here talking today. That's my personal story. So if it's not just secular mindfulness, what is it? And for me, and I think, and I hope for order members, it is the most meaningful pursuit possible. The most meaningful thing you can do with your life. And that's to try and awaken. And then the fourth is, and the last is, for the sake of all beings, I accept this ordination. So my practice and my involvement in the Sangha is not just for me. It's not for my friends only. It's not just for our Sangha locally or as a Triratna Sangha, but it's for every single being in the whole cosmos without any exception. That's why I wanted to join the order. So we have these four acceptance verses, and I think we can use them as a Sangha. We don't have to relate to them as order members, but just, oh, what does it mean to follow a particular system of practices, for example? What does it mean to see differences as part of being a Sangha, but also remembering everything we share? And then we have the two final ones, that it's the goal is so much bigger than anything else in everyday life, and it's not just for me, it's for everyone. So there are three lists of fours that I think we could use, and if we use them more, or I think we already use them in Triratna, but if we use them more, if we keep doing it more and more skillfully, because I guess that's it also, we have to realize that we're trying our best, hopefully. And if we do that, we will deepen the practice that has to do with Sangha. And I also think that if we use these as tools, I think that the whole thing about uniqueness and sameness that we have already started talking a bit about, the qualities of Ratnasambhava and Amitabha, they will both become strength. Like if we use these as tool sets, then I think that differences and sameness will become strengths instead of challenges and problems. So personal story, some Dharma frameworks, and as I said, I wanted to end with one of Bhante's poems as a way of highlighting that actually being a Sangha is quite mystical and mysterious, for me at least. So, I don't know if it's been mentioned, but we had this idea about the 1,000-petal or 70-petal lotus, and it came from this poem that I'm going to read now. So for the team, this poem has been a kind of background poem, and I really like that. That was not just organizational and what to cook, but actually what poem could we use when we plan the whole convention. So I'll read it through, and I'll read the last verse twice. So love grew up between us like a flower, though neither made a sign or breathed a word. Content to watch it growing hour by hour and see its petals by the breezes stirred. At length, it grew to such a breadth and height. It stood there like a mighty forest tree, with 1,000 glorious petals, golden bright. And I could not see you, nor you see me. And so the flower, for both, is all in all. Though each is in the flower in each. And each in each, forever, past recall. A mystery this, beyond the grasp of speech. And so the flower, for both, is all in all. Though each is in the flower in each, and each in each, forever, past recall. A mystery this, beyond the grasp of speech.